Classic Con SCPs. There have been complaints during recent years from a number of individuals that the SCP community has devolved from its origins. Rather than focusing on pithy, concise articles that convey horror through brief, mysterious articles, they instead focus on writing longer and longer articles about how bad the Foundation is and how the world is coming to an end for the umpteenth time. These thoughts are, of course, unfounded, but it's perhaps undeniable that the original series of SCP articles will never be surpassed in the public consciousness, regardless of how many more articles continue to be produced. Classic Con was an attempt to harken back to the old days of the SCP universe, with a strict limit on word count and a focus on horror. The contest proved to be immensely popular among authors, with 155 entries in total, so we'll just be checking out a handful of them this time. Let's take a look. Let's start with SCP-8513, the corpse of Foundation researcher Luke Grayson, which is currently undergoing a process of rejuvenation. Any attempts to slow or prevent this regeneration are futile, as new damage to the corpse is impermanent. Grayson died after a fall from his apartment window on December 6, 2029, before the Betelgeuse supernova. A novel form of radiation was detected worldwide by specialized Foundation equipment during and after this supernova, and Grayson's corpse emits high levels of this radiation. The Foundation has deployed sensors in population centers to determine the extent of 8513 contamination, with these sensors showing high levels of emissions from the remains of every human who died before the event. The affected corpses are regenerating at variable rates, with complete healing likely to occur by December 9th, regardless of how long they've been dead. Notably, those who have died since the event do not appear to be regenerating, even when exposed to the radiation. The Foundation has no plans capable of dealing with the 103 billion humans who will resurrect tomorrow, but they believe that most of them will not be able to escape their graves. So, needless to say, even if most are not able to escape their graves, that's still a pretty big problem for the Foundation. They're not really sure what's going to happen when all these corpses regenerate, and although we might leap to just feral zombies, they might just be normal people again, which is probably even more horrific. It's interesting to note that the zombie outbreak in the original Night of the Living Dead is speculated to be caused by radiation from a returning satellite from Venus. Next, we have SCP-8345, an extinct, infectious Euclidean microorganism that exhibits a number of anomalous effects on its hosts. Its primary anomalous quality is its ability to exist in standard three-dimensional non-Euclidean space despite possessing two-dimensional Euclidean topology and presumably originating from such a lower dimensional space. It accomplishes this feat by occupying flat planes within three-dimensional space, such as walls, paper, and screens where it can survive. While it can survive in such spaces, the absence of living hosts for reproduction make its existence inevitably short-lived. It's believed that its anomalous predation method was an evolutionary adaptation to living as a two-dimensional entity in three-dimensional space. Stage 1 of 8345 infection is functionally undetectable and is believed to occur by a flat section of skin coming into contact with a plane occupied by 8345 cells. Its cells then migrate across the skin, often appearing as a blemish or a bruise, until it can reach an entry point such as a cut on the skin. It will then propagate freely and aggressively on the walls of the host's veins and arteries, as the three-dimensional immune system cannot recognize or react to the two-dimensional foreign bodies. No outward physical symptoms present, but the host may complain of a general feeling of unwellness. At this stage, the loss of mass is generally too low to be noticeable. A case study shows a 28-year-old D-class with a large amount of body tattoos. Upon contact with his soul, The infection migrated up as a bruise until it reached a tattoo, whereupon it shifted into an extension of the tattoo and moved up until it encountered a pre-placed entry wound on the skin. In stage 2, symptoms begin to manifest, as 8345 has covered essentially all the walls of major arteries and veins, which naturally begin to contract as the three-dimensional cylinder is incompatible with their topology. This presents as inexplicable sudden bruising across the extremities and moving towards the chest, as capillaries and arterioles burst from being suddenly compressed into two dimensions. Blood, unable to flow through flat vessels, pools where it is, giving rise to potential crush syndrome, as dying blood cells release poisonous potassium, although hosts don't live long enough to exhibit crush syndrome regardless. Having reached critical mass in the collapsing topology of the bloodstream, 8345 cells flow out into major organs and tissues. At this stage, loss of mass is noticeable, and is usually attributed to weight loss from illness. A case study had a 30-year-old D-class who was unable to move due to swelling and pain in her extremities. An MRI revealed that 78% of the blood vessels in her limbs had flattened out, destroying the internal muscle. In stage 3, the infection causes immense physical pain to the host as it reaches critical mass within minor organs and tissues, forcing their topology to simplify. The three dimensions are compressed down to two, and internal organ details and structures such as those of the gallbladder or pancreas are lost in the simplification, causing them to cease functioning. Muscle mass cannot be represented accurately in two dimensions and is further compressed, causing gangrene and necrosis in the extremities, with hosts typically losing the ability to walk. As the interior marrow of bones is compressed out of existence, blood cells cease reproducing and internal bleeding begins. At this stage, loss of mass is considerable, and the host will have lost 50 to 75% of their pre-infection body weight. A case study of stage 3 shows a 42-year-old D-class that died due to diabetic shock after pancreatic failure. An autopsy revealed that most of his internal muscles and organs were gone entirely, and the flattening of the stomach lining caused stomach acid to flow out into his abdominal cavity, melting the simplified organs and tissues away. Stage 4 infections are precipitated by a buildup of 8345 cells in the major internal organs. The ongoing simplification of the host flattens the lungs' alveoli and eliminates their ability to breathe, though this usually has no effect as the internal topology of the heart's valves has already been compressed out and caused massive heart failure. Pores have closed and hair has fallen out by this point, and all major organ systems have failed. The subject would be in immeasurable pain, but the flattening of the lobes of the brain have rendered them brain dead. At this stage, loss of mass is nearly total, and the subject is no longer visible when seen from a dead-on angle. The case study for this stage is one of two non-Foundation workers that were inadvertently exposed to the 8345 sample during its initial discovery. The nature of 8345 was not realized until 3 months later, whereupon the worker was tracked down. His apartment was believed to be empty until recovery agents discovered that the flattened subject had slipped into a tiny gap between the shower curtain and liner. Lastly, in stage 5, the host is infested with 8345 cells and has been simplified and flattened onto a two-dimensional surface, where they are indistinguishable from any other marking or graffiti. The other non-Foundation worker that was inadvertently exposed to 8345 is in this stage. His corpse was found being sold at auction, having been mistaken for a postmodern artwork, and he has since been contained as the last remaining sample of SCP-8345. 8345 is believed to be extinct in the wild, and was resurrected by the Foundation using another SCP after initial fossilized cells were discovered in 1951 in scrapings from Lascaux, a network of caves in France containing over 600 cave paintings dated to the Paleolithic, primarily of large animals and humans. A secondary anomalous effect in Lascaux, a high-pitched, nearly imperceptible supersonic whine throughout the cave is believed to be unrelated. So yeah, it's an infection that turns three-dimensional people into two-dimensional images, but it sure seems like they're still conscious in some ways, endlessly screaming throughout all time. Fantastic. Next, we have SCP-5315, the Rowan Stark Mountain and its connected cave system, located within the Appalachian Mountain Range in the US. Individuals that begin to scale the mountain will be unable to leave its perimeter, as the topography of the area will regularly shift while outside of the hiker's line of sight, leading them further up the mountain regardless of their attempts to descend. Victims usually become aware of this effect approximately 2 hours into their attempted descent. Vegetation on the mountain thins at an elevation of around 300 meters, completely dissipating at around 400 meters. Any trail markers left behind by hikers will be removed by 5315 moments after they leave the hiker's line of sight. If the mountain is traversed by a group of people, the anomaly will separate the group through harsh weather, landslides, dense fog, or changes in its geography. No group has maintained contact beyond 600 meters of elevation. Individuals scaling the mountain will experience intense physical fatigue and dehydration, unable to rest due to increasingly hostile and rough terrain. They will, however, continue to scale regardless of their attempts to stop due to physical injury, although it's noted that the anomaly lacks any cognitohazardous or mind-altering effects. Once the target reaches an altitude of around 2100 meters, the terrain funnels into a narrow valley, leading directly to a cavern located along the mountain's northeastern face. Regardless of if the target attempts to flee, they will inevitably be forced into the cave. Those who enter are unable to be recovered, and remote viewing shows that the cavern walls gradually shrink down to 2 feet in diameter, leading into a pit. It's unknown what's at the bottom. Despite the anomalous phenomena surrounding 5315, the rate of disappearances in the area is statistically average for the eastern US. Because of this, the Department of Geology and the Department of Statistics were tasked with determining the reasons for this phenomenon. We're shown two maps of the US, one showing missing persons and one showing cave systems, with the dots almost completely lining up. It's currently debated if SCP-5315 is unique in its predatory behavior. So yeah, that suggests that the mountain is definitely not unique in eating people, and there's similar mountains all across the US. Although that sure feels like something that would get noticed by the general public before long. Next up, we have SCP-8490, the containment procedures of which state that candles, aerosol dispensers, and scented beads have been distributed throughout the site and are to be replaced regularly. Mirrored surfaces have been marred as a preventative measure. Under no circumstances should personnel be unaccompanied, and search parties are prohibited. Cleanup is also forbidden, as it constitutes direct interaction. One's line of sight should not dwell above another individual for extended periods. The description is no more helpful than that, stating that it was inadvertently communicated to current secure facility and cannot be transferred back to site of origin. The transmission / selection vector is unsolvable, and to date, 67 staff have been assimilated or incorporated via retrocausal embodiment. Despite subjective proximity to all personnel, the source is ineffable. Paranoid sensations are therefore ubiquitous and untreatable. 12 attempts have been made to document its physicality, but each invariably failed. A census goes down each of the levels of the facility, starting with the surface level. The three personnel on this level are Banner, DeJong, and Holden, although Holden is crossed out and referenced as Figure 1.1, an image showing only a blood-stained hallway. Maintenance operations continue uninterrupted, and a partial conveyance of the anomaly was sent to the main site via coded missive. They're awaiting special response slash rescue. On sublevel 1, the safe class reliquary is successfully placed on lockdown. Visser is left to their own devices, while Stopker and Barrow looked up. Sublevel 2 contains the majority of the population, 49, and the southern wing is off limits. The security team here set the precedent for non-viable approach slash offensive, and is considered responsible for the smell. Sublevel 3 formerly housed the research team and test subjects. Acknowledgement of their results triggers the anomaly's primary effects. The bulkheads here have been sealed. In the Euclid containment wing, an SCP was affected despite its unnatural lifespan, and its containment chamber's sensors were damaged by the tachyon release. Another SCP was not affected, and its file has been updated to confirm that it doesn't constitute a living being. The railway on sublevel 4 was sabotaged to prevent spread to the main site. Sanders, Baudelaire, and Hannawald are safe slash sheltering in place. They cannot risk egress through Euclid containment. Lastly, sublevel 5 was the initial contact point, with the mortuary being the first affected. 9 staff learned the danger of identifying the anomaly. 6 determined proper conveyance at personal cost. 2 attempted physical interaction. And Dowell chose the furnace. So this one is written in a very short form style, deliberately avoiding practically any information about the anomaly. We have to piece together what we can as we go through, learning that the Foundation discovered something very bad in their mortuary, and identifying it or even looking up leads to some very dire consequences. We really have no idea what the anomaly is, other than it affects living creatures but not dead ones, involves time in some way, and actively resists any attempts to describe or explain it. It's really just one screwed Foundation site. Next up, we have SCP-8304, the former Waterhouse Processing Plant, a factory farm and industrial slaughterhouse in Pennsylvania focused on poultry, pork, and beef. The company was operated by Waterhouse LLC before its closure in January of 1972. Within weeks of its closure, various anomalous phenomena began to affect the residents of the town, including inexplicable, often violent deaths of pets, widespread insomnia, an increase in grievous self-harm, especially among those with no prior mental health issues, an increase in homicide, self-inflicted death by starvation, and cannibalism. Containment began in June of 1972 following the confirmation of this activity. Prolonged inactivity within the plant correlates with the manifestation of these external anomalous phenomena, which lessen significantly when the plant is operational and disappear entirely when the plant is filled beyond capacity. Animals within the plant display an increasing chance of developing extreme malformations and paraphysical traits during their lifespans. No animals have been born with these afflictions, but instead develop them over time while living in the plant. Per Protocol Styx 3, these entities are to be slaughtered as late as possible in their natural lifespan. We're then given a short list of these animals, including a cow whose vocal cords fused with its gastrointestinal tissue, which then moaned continuously throughout its stomach for 18 hours prior to slaughter. A pig's blood became gelatinous, resulting in its respiration becoming near untenable, likely due to oxygen being unable to circulate. It remained alive for 7 hours until slaughter. Another cow developed cyclopia over 59 hours, and upon completion, the fusing of the skull left it with brain damage. It was slaughtered after 12 days. A chicken lost all organic mass below the knee, remaining immobile for 19 days, while another chicken developed adult-sized horse teeth within its beak, breaking it and fracturing its skull. It was slaughtered after 18 hours. Another cow's internal musculature arranged itself into dense knots resembling clenched fists, which contracted in sequence every 45 minutes. It was slaughtered after 14 days. A pig's skin grew rigid and calcified over a period of 5 days, at which point the skin had become a thick, continuous shell. It remained fully conscious throughout, responding to stimuli via eye movement. A chicken's legs merged into a singular trunk-like appendage, causing it to move via undulating muscle contractions. It was slaughtered after 5 days. Another cow's internal organs ceased biological function but remained metabolically active. It displayed no vital signs but continued responding to stimuli for 26 days, at which point it was slaughtered. A pig's entire circulatory system shifted outside of its body, floating 15 centimeters above it. It remained alive and ambulatory until it was slaughtered 16 days later. Lastly, one cow was inverted, and it was slaughtered immediately. Due to the nature of being stationed here, staff are given access to limited psychological health care, so we're given an interview between a doctor and the plant manager, Gerard Harrell. The doctor asks him how much longer he's here, to which Harrell says 7 months. The doctor replies that he's been here longer than most, and that takes strength, but Harrell says that that's not what it takes. The doctor asks if he volunteered, but Harrell says no one volunteers. He was put into this position nearly instantly after Jerry turned himself into an ornament. The doctor says that they're not supposed to talk about that, and Harrell says that he lasted this long without talking to anyone else about all this. The doctor remarks that he's supposed to tell him that that's a good thing, as not everyone makes it this far. Harrell snorts and says that they're feeding the world, one twitching thing at a time. He thinks that people are too comfortable asking what that costs. The people in this city and the Foundation filing away another successful day without a breach. Meat shows up clean in plastic. Reports get gold stars. Nobody asks what they scrape off the floor. The doctor asks if he wants people to know what he deals with, but Harrell says that no one would care. They'd complain if the price went up. The doctor tells him that he's helping keep people alive, but Harrell says that they don't have to see what alive looks like before it stops moving. They don't have to see what alive looks like when it's forced to suffer. At the end of the slaughter line, there's a box of flayed heads. Jerry used to tell him not to go near it, said that it was his job to deal with it, and he never asked why. He didn't want to know. When Jerry quit, though, it became his. One thing is always left on those heads. One thing they can't clean up and package. Their eyes. Every day he walks to the end of the line, and everything he's killed is staring back at him. He dumps them like trash, and they watch him on their way down, knowing it was him that did this. The doctor asks if he wants to keep talking, and Harrell just says, not really. So yeah, the allegory here is not especially subtle, although on the surface you'd think that the Foundation just keeps operating the place to prevent the anomalous effects from leaking out. The fact that they still go ahead and sell the meat under the guise of keeping the world fed, when they probably have numerous ways to solve the world's problems, is a bit questionable. I guess if you've ever wanted to know what McNuggets are made out of, here you go. Next, we have SCP-8975, a small hole in the basement floor of a home in Canada, first discovered in 1961 by the police when the sole occupant, a Mr. Shaughnessy, was reported missing by his extended family. It was first discovered by the Foundation a day later when the investigating officer, Detective Gartner, was reported missing by his department. The hole has no apparent bottom, and efforts to plumb it have been indefinitely suspended. Routine sounding conducted during the initial investigation of the house recovered 6 items from the hole, and researcher Harvey delivered these items to Foundation experts for analysis. A claw fragment from a rat, a clump of hair from a cat, loose eyelashes, nasal secretions, loose skin fragments, and a strand of hair were all found, up to 45 meters down. The eyelashes were identified as coming from Shaughnessy's child, the nasal secretion from his wife, and the loose skin fragments were from him. The strand of hair, however, was from Detective Gartner. These results were deemed sufficient to classify the hole as an SCP object, after which further sounding operations were conducted by researcher Patel. She recovered 7 additional items, including a clump of hair from a rat, a whisker from a cat, human gums belonging to Shaughnessy's kid, a fingernail from his wife, his loose skin fragments, blood from Detective Gartner, and a tooth from researcher Harvey. On the identification of this last item, staff attempted to contact researcher Harvey without success. Following a search of his home, he was declared missing. Staff then attempted to contact researcher Patel without success, and following a search of her home, she was also declared missing. An armed guard was immediately posted to the basement where the hole is located, while surveillance equipment was en route. When technicians arrived, the guard was missing. The house was immediately vacated, and the basement was hermetically sealed. No further soundings have been attempted. It's rare to see the Foundation so utterly defeated by an anomaly, where they decide to just pack things up and never look at it again. We'll never know exactly what's going on with this thing, other than it's one evil hole. Let's finish with the overall winner of the contest, SCP-8557, a biological phenomenon wherein continuous self-mutilation can cause recent wounds to become sapient oral cavities capable of sustained and coherent communication. The process is painless, as affected wounds cease bleeding and undergo coagulation within 4 minutes. The formation sequence begins with the development of lips derived from local epidermal tissue, followed by the emergence of a complete adult dental arch, and finally a non-functional tongue. These instances consistently exhibit a demeanor described as unconditionally caring, engaging their hosts in personalized, emotionally validating dialogue with precise recognition of prominent interests, fears, and unresolved grief. This attitude induces psychological dependency chemically comparable to drug addiction. Upon their initial manifestation, many subjects escalate self-harm practices, both in severity and frequency, claiming that the experience is being understood without explanation, finally feeling seen, and most commonly, a pain that does not hurt. 8557 instances have shown no resistance to surgical intervention, and suturing can be performed using standard methods, after which they simply become inactive. The anomaly was discovered on June 22, 2007, via an anonymous post on the 4chan message board. The post, which included photographs and a personal testimony, was traced to Akari Tanaka, a 19-year-old woman residing in Japan. Further investigation revealed that Tanaka had been a victim of 8557 since early childhood and developed a complex emotional relationship with it. She reportedly treated the anomalies as pets, attempting to feed them individually and assigning unique nicknames to each one. The subject's romantic partner was not only aware of the phenomenon, but actively encouraged her continued self-mutilation in order to increase the total 8557 population. Occasionally, she would sedate Tanaka with prescription medication, leaving her unconscious for extended periods of time, during which she exclusively interacted with 8557 instances. It's like that episode of Seinfeld where they drug the woman to play with her vintage toy collection, except way worse. At the time of surgical intervention, 47% of Tanaka's skin was covered by self-inflicted injuries. 6 months later, she took her own life. Foundation personnel attended her funeral in case of any posthumous effects. No civilians were present. It's certainly a pretty gross anomaly, but also quite tragic as well. Tanaka hurt herself as a child and developed these talking growths, which ended up being her only companions throughout life. Even though she had a partner, that partner seemed to only be interested in her because of the anomaly, and didn't even come to her funeral. Neither did anyone else for that matter. So, does Classic Con prove that the original series of SCP articles is a better fit for the overall tone and concept of SCP compared to the other modern articles? If anything, Classic Con proves that current contributors to the site continue to surpass any expectations of a collaborative writing effort this long in the tooth. We continue to get surprising, fresh, original stories in the SCP universe, whether they be short or lengthy, horror, dramatic, or comedic, tales, or documents. The SCP universe continues to expand every day in different ways, and while I do enjoy the lengthier articles and stories quite a lot, sometimes the less said, the better.